We're coming to the end, guys. We've almost did it. We're almost through. We've only been doing this 12 weeks. We've only got, let's see, chapter 12, chapter 13. My guess is we have 3 weeks left on this series. As we've gone through the book of Hebrews, we've seen many different aspects of the better things that God has offered us. Last week, we looked at Hebrews chapter 11, the first six verses. Thank you very much. We looked at the first six verses of Hebrews chapter 11 last week, and this verse right here, Hebrews 11, 6, as I said last week, I think this is the most succinct verse on faith in the entirety of the Bible. This verse contains all of the vital elements of our faith, all of the different components of the faith that we are to have, right? We have the thing that we are to have faith in, the thing that we are to believe, right? Must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Two components there, right? Believing in God and who he is, but then also believing what God has said. And notice that those are not the same things. A lot of people believe in God, sort of the vague concept of God perhaps, or even Jehovah. A lot of people might believe in Jehovah, but they don't necessarily believe the things he said, right? That he rewards those who seek him. So there's two components to that, right? The things that God has promised as rewards and the very fact of his existence. We see also that we must draw near to God, that he rewards not just anyone, right, but those who seek him. So this faith that we have, it is not some passive sort of wishy-washy, vague, nebulous idea, but it is active. It is a thing that we do. And we looked at that last week, the concepts last week that we examined. And the point of Hebrews chapter 11, as we go through the people, right, are the things that they did, right? By faith, so-and-so did this thing. By faith, so-and-so did this thing. By faith, so-and-so did this thing. So it's not just about this sort of idea that I have in my mind, but it is the means by which I actively draw near to God. And then finally, of course, without faith, it is impossible to please him. That we can't just go through the motions, right? It's not just the things that we do, but it is also the things that's in our heart and mind. So I might do some things that are righteous, quote unquote. I might do some things that have some religious components to them, but without faith, specifically what? That I believe he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Without that fundamental belief, it is impossible to please him. It doesn't matter what I do if I do not have the accompanying faith. So, as we have examined these verses, the people in Hebrews 11, all the different people, right, the hall of faith, attempted to please God through seeking him and trusting in his promises to them. And the people that he has chosen, the people that the Spirit has chosen to exemplify this as we go through Hebrews chapter 11, this is what they did, right? They exemplified Hebrews 11, 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God, because those who would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. All the people that we're going to talk about, this is what they did. This is how they lived. They wanted to please God, and they drew near to God, they sought him, and they believed that he would reward them, right? They believed that he would do the things that he said. And it's different for each of the people in Hebrews chapter 11. The promises that he made to them were not the same. But whatever the promise was, they believed and trusted in his ability to deliver, even though, as we're going to see, in some ways he did not deliver for them yet. It is something that will be still in the future. Number one, how did they seek to draw near to God? That is to say, what did they do in their attempts to please him, in their attempt to seek him, as they were drawing near to him? What things did they do? And we could broadly break this down into four things, although there's details, right? Number one, they drew to God through sacrifice. Of course, Abel, the very first one, by faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice, right? And we know the story, of course, in Genesis, is Abel offers the best portions, right? And Cain, of course, his sacrifice is rejected by God. And at least according to Hebrews chapter 11, Cain probably didn't have the faith that he should have had. Maybe Cain didn't offer a good enough sacrifice. Maybe the content of his sacrifice was poor. But either way, I think it's pretty clear that Cain did not have the faith that was required to please God. And so as Abel is offering sacrifice to him, now this is, of course, a common theme as we go through the book or the chapter of Hebrews 11, Abraham made sacrifices. What did he sacrifice? the comfort of his homeland, the security of living where he was to go on this long journey. Moses, what did Moses sacrifice? All the riches of Egypt, being second in command in Egypt and in the household of Pharaoh. He sacrificed all the passing pleasures of sin. One of the things, the primary things as we read through chapter 11 is the concept of sacrifice, as these people gave things up in their pursuit of God. Things that they considered to be worth less than what? The reward that God had promised to them. If you believe that God rewards those who seek him, then it will not seem like such a great deal if I have to give up these temporary, finite things, if I have the faith in God's promises. Number two, they drew near to God through obedience. You think about Noah and Noah's example of faith in verse 7. God tells him what? Build an ark. There's going to be a flood. Things are going to happen. Everybody's going to be wiped away in this flood. And up until that point, it's entirely possible that there had never been any flooding, like even the rivers or anything. It's entirely possible there hasn't really even been rain up until this point, depending on how you, there's a lot of different elements to that. And so Noah is asked to do a thing that is absurd, ridiculous. Build this boat in the middle of land because I'm going to send a flood and everything's going to flood and it's all going to wipe out. And yet, what did he do? He obeyed because he believed, A, that God exists, and B, that he rewards those who seek him. He believed that God would follow through on the thing that he said, right? And so he obeyed God. He did the thing that God wanted him to do. Abraham, again, is a great example of this. Abraham, I know you've got a pretty good life over here, but you need to leave your homeland and go to this other place. You don't know what it looks like. You don't even know how to get there. I'll tell you how to get there. You've never been there before. You have no concept of what it is. But go over there and I'll bless you over there. And of course he does that. He obeys and does what God commands. In verse 17 through 19, he's asked to sacrifice his son, right? Go up on the mountain and sacrifice Isaac. And I like the way that the author of Hebrews puts it. He does that, why? He thought to himself, well, even if I do this thing, even if Isaac is sacrificed, I don't know how God would continue with his promise, but maybe he'll just raise Isaac from the dead. Even if he didn't know exactly how that would be accomplished, that God would reward him, but he knew that God could do it, even if he didn't have all the details. God could raise him from the dead if that's what needs to happen. And so he obeyed. Number three, they drew near to God through defiance of the world. And these are all linked, right? Part of the defiance of the world is the obedience. Part of the defiance of the world is the sacrifice. But more specifically, we think about Moses and his parents in verses 23 through 28. Moses' parents, as they hid, of course, Pharaoh's killing all the Israelite boys, they hide Moses in defiance of Pharaoh's law. They hide Moses and think to themselves, God can deliver him. God will protect him. They didn't know how it would be accomplished. They just send him down the river. They're not in control of that. They have no, now they do send someone to watch, maybe to see what goes on. But the idea that Pharaoh's daughter would find him and take him in, they had no idea that was going to happen. They had no concept of that. They trusted that God would do something, whatever it happened to be. They didn't know. And so they defied Pharaoh's law out of faith. Moses, of course, continued that tradition, right? As Moses grows up in the household of Pharaoh and things are going pretty well for Moses and he has a great education, he has stuff, he has all the riches of the world and he's doing pretty well in Egypt. And then he realizes that, no, I should not have all this. My people are in slavery. Of course, he flees for a while and then he has to come back and defy Pharaoh even more. Not just that he leaves Pharaoh's household, but that he comes back later and does actually in his face defy him. Let my people go. Rahab, in verse 31, we looked at, I didn't plan this, it just sort of happened. As we looked at Rahab several weeks ago on Sunday night, she defied her people too. As she was living in the city of Jericho, Israel approaches the city, right? Israel approaches Jericho and they're going to march around and the walls are going to fall down. She doesn't know any of that. What does she know? God's people are coming and they're going to conquer us and we are all terrified of them. So I'm not just going to sit around and wait for that to happen. I'm going to defy my people and I'm going to join them. Doesn't matter what the people in Jericho want. I'm going to be on their side, Israel's side. They drew near to God by defying the world. And whatever that in our lives, that has any number of different meanings, that we're not going to go along with what is popular or right according to the world, that we're not going to allow the pleasures of sin to blind us to God's will, that we're not going to be obsessed with possessions or wealth or material things, that we're going to stand in defiance to the way the world operates. Finally, they drew near to God through suffering. In verses 35, we're going to read actually this, the suffering that they experienced. Oops. Hebrews 11, 32 through 38. What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness. I'm reminded of what Paul says, right? I will boast of my weaknesses, for it is in those things that I find the power of Christ. I'm paraphrasing there, obviously. Where was I? Became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. You ever thought about that? What must be going through your mind as the saw is going through you? And I like what he says there, right? Refusing to accept release. They could have really had that release at any time if they had stopped defying the world, if they had refused to obey God, if they had refused to sacrifice. They could have at any moment joined the world and ended that torment, but they remained steadfast. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy. This is probably my second favorite verse in all of the Bible. It's ironic. Both of them are in Hebrews 11. Think about what that means. Of whom the world was not worthy. They were too good for this world. The people in their lives did not deserve them. They did not. They were so faithful to God, so upright, so righteous. The world did not deserve to have them in their lives, of whom the world was not worthy. That's the kind of person I would like to be, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens of caves of the earth. The people of God, they drew near to Him through sacrifice, obedience, defiance, and suffering. And ultimately, aren't these the same ways that we draw near to God? Aren't these the things that we are asked to do as well? Number two, what did they trust that God would do? And the question is what, right? Why did they do these things? Why suffer? Why sacrifice? Why obey? Why defy the world that they were in? Why did they do these things? Because ultimately, they trusted in God, right? Those who would draw near to God must do what two things? Believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him. What did they trust that God would do? Number one, God rewards through acceptance. As we see in Abel and Rahab, what does it say of them? That his sacrifice, Abel's sacrifice, was accepted by God because of his faith, because he did believe and he did the right things. Rahab was accepted in what way? She was accepted into Israel. Even though she was a pagan, even though she was a heathen, even though she was a prostitute, she was accepted into God's people because of her faith that led her to defy the world. She was accepted as part of God's children. God rewards through acceptance. That when we do these things and when we have this faith, He accepts us, includes us in His family. Number two, God rewards through salvation. We think about Noah and Moses and Israel in general, right? We can think about the Old Testament is just full of this in general. But Noah, he believed, he did the things that God wanted, he had faith, and he followed through on the faith, and what? He was saved. Now, in Noah's case, it was very literal salvation. He was saved from the flood. He didn't die in the flood, right? And his household was saved. That was how God rewarded him, because he believed that God would do that, and so God did that. God rewarded his faith by salvation. With Moses, we think about Moses and Israel as that story that he tells, right? Moses leaves Israel, leaves Egypt, he comes back to Egypt, let my people go. He has that faith, and God rewards that faith how? In the salvation and redemption of Israel as they are released from captivity in Egypt. He did reward. He did follow through as Moses believed that he would. Number three, they were rewarded through the fulfillment of promises. And these are all linked, right? These all go together. But Sarah, she even is called out here, right? By faith, Sarah conceived at an age which she should not have conceived. That was a promise that God made that was fulfilled because they had faith, Sarah and Abraham. Now, it's interesting, even Sarah did not have faith at the first, right? She did not believe at the beginning, but she did come around eventually. And Abraham, I think, was instrumental in that, believing that God would do what he said. Abraham, when he is when God says to him, leave and go to this other land, how is he rewarded? He does get to that land, and he does end up having that land and possessing that land, and now Israel later leaves, but then they come back, right, and they possess the land later on, as these all are interconnected, right, because Moses leads the people out of Egypt, and Abraham's descendants do possess the land. And more than that, as God promises Abraham that your descendants will be more numerous than the stars, and through you all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, and isn't Hebrews 11 sort of the fulfillment of that promise? That they all have received the things that was promised to them. Now, these ideas have different timetables, different applications for God's people in different ages. This does not look the same for the people of the Mosaical covenant. The people of the covenant of Israel doesn't look the same as the people of Noah, right? The Noah's covenant with God doesn't look the same perhaps in our covenant, but these are the basic ways that God rewards those who seek him. And if you would please God, it is the thing that you need to understand, that God will reward you through acceptance, salvation, and fulfillment of promises. Not the same promises, not the same salvation, not the same acceptance, but in fact better than the things that they received. And isn't that the point of the book of Hebrews? The promises that God made you are better than the promises he made to them. The salvation that he offers you is better than the salvation he offered them. The acceptance that he offers you is better than the acceptance he offered them. Either you believe, in parentheses have faith there, right? Because that's the same word. Either you believe that God will do what he says, or you don't. I can't answer that for you, right? Do you believe it or not? Do you trust that God will do what he says? And if you do trust that God will do what he says, what should that say then about the rest of his instructions and commandments? Because you can't have it both ways, guys. You can't believe that God will reward you and not also believe the warnings and the consequences, right? You can't have it both ways. You can't pick and choose. If you have genuine and steadfast faith that God will do what he says, that applies to the good things that he's promised and the bad things that he's promised. You can't have it either way. You can't just pick one of them. Either it's all true or none of it is. Note that God works on his own terms, and it might at times be confusing to us, right? And the reason I had this scripture reading read for us, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised. Now, they received some of the things that were promised. They were accepted. They were saved. But the ultimate thing, that being a reward in heaven, they didn't have any concept of that, right? Having seen them and greeted them from afar, having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. And if they had been thinking of the land out of which they had gone out, maybe he's thinking about Abraham there, right? They would have had opportunity to return, but as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. They did not receive it then, but they will. He has prepared for them a city, that city in heaven that has been prepared not just for us, but for them. And they will receive that even if they didn't on this earth. They did not receive the ultimate promise yet. It is a thing that has been provided for them. And the power of their faith was what? There is no way that many of the people in this chapter could have envisioned or understood what God was doing. There's no way they had any idea of that. Abraham did not have any concept of the Messiah and the things that he would suffer in the formation of the church. David didn't have any idea of that. Abel didn't have any idea of that. No one had any idea. We are the ones who understand that. And yet, even in their lack of understanding, they still did what God asked, even though they did not have the thing that we have, the better thing that has been provided for us, right? 1 Corinthians 2:8 through 10, none of the rulers of this age understood this, for if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory, but as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. But these things God has revealed to us through his Spirit. For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. The better thing at the end of Hebrews 11, the better thing that we have been offered, provided for us, is the knowledge of those promises. All these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God has provided something better for us, that apart from us they should not be made perfect. They will be made perfect, but only because we have received the better thing, the knowledge that I'm not wondering what the promise of God is. I'm not looking for it. I'm not seeking it. I know eternity with God in heaven is what's on the table. Eternity with my Creator in a land of no pain and no sickness and no dying and no suffering. I understand that that is the promise. I have that perfect knowledge that God has given to us through His Word. That is the better thing provided for us, is that my faith is based on a complete understanding of His promises. Theirs was incomplete. Theirs was partial. And yet they still had that great faith. And if they who lacked such knowledge could have that faith, what kind of faith should we have? We who have been given the better thing, the perfect thing, what should we be able to do? If they were able to conquer nations and stop up the mouths of lions and survive all manner of horrible suffering and endure steadfast to the end, what should we be able to do with the great knowledge that God has given us? We won't surpass their faith, but maybe, perhaps, if we are dedicated, if we are willing, we could match their faith.